Good morning, Penguin Radio. This is DJ Homeschool, and you are listening to Real Life. It is Wednesday, October 15th. It is 8 a.m., and I am so happy right now because it is finally starting to cool down here in Northern California. We have Indian summers, and oh my goodness, it has been hot, hot, hot. I told my mom the other day on the phone that I was going to start drinking hot tea, even though it was almost 100 degrees out, and burning fall candles and just to will on the fall weather. And I think it worked because the last couple days have been nice and cool, and we actually got rain last night, and so that was really nice to fall asleep to. The sound of rain helps me sleep so much better. I don't know about you guys, but it was really nice. And I'm really excited today because it's the second to last day of midterms. I have a midterm here in a couple hours, and I think I'm pretty prepared for it. And then tomorrow I only have one more, and then I'm home free. It's been a really long week filled with very little sleep and lots of caffeine. And our library here at school, it closes at midnight, and on the weekends it's even earlier. And so because of this, you kind of got to improvise. And there are 24-hour Starbucks in San Francisco. And I have a few of them that I like to go to. And they're always really packed, but sometimes you have to wait around for a seat. But when you do finally get one, they're these awesome locations. And you can they're pretty quiet. You know, most people are there to work, and you can just kind of settle in and get your work done until your heart is absolutely content. They are 24 hours. I think they close on Mondays for like 3 hours or something like that. But it's really nice. And so that's my little study trick, is just to escape to the city by myself. And sometimes I take a friend with me, but we just kind of go settle in and just crank out all of the work. So I've frequented the 24-hour Starbucks this week, but it's been good, very productive. So just two more and then I'm done. But it's been a really fun week around Dominican though. Last weekend was family weekend, and we had convocation for all the students, you know, that really excelled academically, and they recognized the student athletes that have like the great, really good GPAs. And so that was really nice. And, you know, all the families were invited, and so you got to see all the parents walking around campus. So that was cool. And we had a student activities fair, and I think this was my favorite part, and it was, we got to go, and Penguin Radio did live broadcasting. Our teacher, DJ Noni, set us up, and she was really helpful in getting us organized, taking down the mobile broadcasting station, and a few of us, we all went down there, and some of the DJs got to do some interviews and live commentary. So that was a really great experience. We got to talk to like the director of Residence Life. We talked to Lorelei Young. She's our director. And then we also talked to Julia Welch. She's part of the Global Education Office, and she coordinates the student exchange program. So if any of you guys are interested, you students at Dominican, if you're interested in studying abroad, you should go see Julia. But we had a really big number of people from athletics, and we had student health, and I'm actually going to go hiking with one of the ladies from student health. We're going to go hike the fire trail up behind the school. So it was really a really fun experience to kind of learn how the mobile broadcasting works, and then to be able to like network and connect with the other students and faculty. So we had a really great time, and it was, you know, really grateful for that experience. Also, this week, I'm finishing up my work week with the twins, and then they are getting ready to go to Florida. And I love them so much, but they are going to go for a week, and I'm so excited to just have some time and just kind of be by myself and, you know, maybe take a nap or read a book. At least my Monday, Wednesday, Friday afternoons when I usually have them. My grandma was really sweet, and she sent me some new journals, and so I'm going to get caught up on my journaling. There's just something about new notebooks that I love, and I have no idea what it is, but buying like school products and notebooks and pens are my absolute favorite. So that was really nice. But coming up today, I have a ton of stuff that I want to talk about. And when we talk wellness, we're going to talk plastic and the new laws against plastic bags. And in beauty, we're going to get down to the nitty gritty of nail care and good nail products and how you can help protect your hands and nails when using salon services. We're going to get really real today in relationships, and we're going to talk about abusive relationships and what that might look like for you or for a friend in need. You know, what to look for, how to get help. Then finally, we're going to round it out with some organization. I told you last week that I would talk to you guys about Trello, and today, here it is. I'm going to brief you on some school and work project organization. Are you ready? Let's get real. So let's get the skinny on plastic. You know, everyone uses plastic, and it's a big part of pretty much everybody's life. I mean, if you look in your makeup bag or your first aid kit, you know, most containers are plastic. You know, you got your shampoo and then Tupperware to store like all your leftover food, Ziploc bags, you know, even food packaging or sports equipment, like you name it, chances are there's plastic in it. And, you know, there's really a lot of it in the world. And there was a study conducted by the Ocean Conservatory in 2008, and plastic bags came in second to discarded cigarette butts as the most identified type of trash within the ocean. And that is just amazing to me that we are letting all of this plastic, along with our cigarette butts, like cigarettes, to go into the ocean and just litter all of them. So it's just a lot of rampant waste. And items like plastic packaging and bottles, they're just being thrown away every day. And I have to admit, this is something that I'm guilty of. I just throw it away. I'm not big on recycling. I think it's absolutely great, but I get busy or I forget, or, you know, I'm in a hurry and I just throw it in a, you know, trash bin. And so I'm learning that that really is harmful. It's not just trying to be nice and, oh, okay, I'm going to be a good humanitarian and recycle. It's necessary for our ecosystem because there are a lot of other things that depend on our recycling of plastic and other materials. And all this plastic are ending up, they're in trash sites, and they're not just in landfills, but they're getting into our forests and our creeks and rivers and seas and oceans and all of our bodies of water around the world. And I talked last week about the movie Dolphin Tale 2, and it really kind of was an eye-opening experience to see all these marine life animals that are affected by our bad habits and hang-ups as humans, and how their life is being invaded by our trash. Like, if you think about it in that way, who wants their life to be invaded by trash? And, you know, we got to watch out for the creatures too. And so while some of these items are recycled, the growth of plastic consumption, and more importantly, the improper disposal, they currently outpace the efforts of recycling. So we're throwing away more, letting them into landfills. We're doing that more than we are recycling. And so we really have to get down to business and start recycling, and that way we can produce post-consumer plastic materials. A big reason why this is not good for the environment is that it doesn't break down. That's a big one. It's not biodegradable. And plastic never disappears. It becomes a long-lasting type of like plastic dust. And when items like plastic bags break down, they soak up and release toxins. And that those toxins will then contaminate soil and water. And then that will really harm the animals that ingest any of these plastic fragments. And so it's this vicious cycle of consuming, you know, waste, contamination, then the animals eat it, and then they get sick. And it's really not good for our ecosystem. And it's really difficult because, you know, producing these recyclable materials really do take a lot of energy. And it's not all that energy at use isn't good for the environment either. So we really, it's kind of showing us that we need to find a better solution. We need to find a happy medium, and we need to reduce the use of plastic altogether. And so later on, we're going to talk about ways that people are starting to reduce their use of plastic, but it's something that we really need to focus on. And not only is it a danger to us, but like I said, it's aquatic life as well. So here's a little fact for you. Every square mile of ocean has 46,000 pieces of plastic floating in it. And so this is a big reason why over a million seabirds, whales, and dolphins, and seals, and sea turtles die from plastic debris that ends up in the oceans. Sharks are also a part of this statistic. There are 100,000 sharks that are part of the death toll every year. And, you know, you can look it up on YouTube about plastic in the oceans, and you'll find a lot of heartbreaking videos. And they show you how this plastic ends up inside these animals, and it kills them. They're going to eat it, and they'll die. And so that's something that the impact of this plastic pollution in our ocean and ecosystem, it's just really creating chaos in our environment. And so as humans, that is our duty to kind of be careful of that and be conscious of what we're doing to the environment and how we can become better people. So in addition to these plastics not breaking down fast, the materials are also, when broken down, they are very dangerous. Plastic automatically contains a lot of toxins. You know, they have phthalates and BPA and flame retardants. And as plastic breaks down, it's going to absorb chemicals within the ground that are toxic to animals. And they easily damage the environment with pesticides. So this was the kicker for me. When I was doing my research, it talked about how plastic, the use and consumption of plastic, is what is sustaining the petroleum industry. And the production of plastic for the U.S. alone uses 331 billion barrels of petroleum. And that is the total of 5% of the national consumption of petroleum in general. And this production, it plays a harmful role, really, in polluting the environment. And it contaminates both your water and the air. And so you guys know how much I love statistics. And so I found this little tidbit that I found really interesting. And it takes 17 million barrels each year of oil. So 17 million barrels of oil in order to make the water bottles that the U.S. market consumes. Just water bottles alone. You know, those plastic, Aquafina, or Smart Water, whatever it is that you use. 17 million barrels of oil. And so I looked up the population of, you know, I knew San Francisco wasn't like the biggest population, but there's around 800, it said 800,000 something. So somewhere in that range, almost 900,000. But I started looking, and 17 million barrels is more people than, is more barrels than people that live in San Francisco, New York, LA, and Chicago combined. All of those cities combined. And to me, that is absolutely ridiculous. The amount of oil, that amount of oil can fuel 1 million cars every year. There are so many ways to reduce the impact of plastic bags and other, not just plastic bags, but plastic on the environment. And one of those ways is to reduce our use of plastic bags and implement reusable totes at our grocery stores. And another big one is, you know, using mugs or travel tumblers for our next cup of coffee when we go, you know, to Starbucks or Pete's or whatever kind of coffee cup or coffee place you use and frequent. You can really reduce the use of plastic there. But we have to take it to the next level, and we need to engage our communities to clean up our environment. And we really need to pressure the local governments to ban or tax the use of plastic bags. So I found this interesting, but Ireland has reduced its plastic bag use by 90% by introducing a 37% tax on plastic bags. That is a lot of tax, 37 cents on the dollar. It's a lot. And so I felt, you know, really proud to live in California, because that's exactly what they're doing right now, too. You know, environmentalists are encouraging the use of these reusable shopping bags because a couple weeks ago, California became the first state to ban most plastic bags at grocery and convenience stores. So, you know, it was Governor Jerry Brown, he signed a law and, you know, it was sparked by the concerns about, you know, the ubiquitous plastic grocery bag. And the ban is actually going to begin in July of 2015. So Los Angeles and San Francisco and a bunch of other local California governments have already passed or implemented similar bans. And they're just using this as a way to encourage reusable bags and cut down on discarded plastic because it's clogging the waterways and it's washing into the oceans. And California has been the first state to enact this statewide ban. Governor Brown said that this bill is a step in the right direction and it reduces the torrent of plastic pollution for our beaches, parks, and even the vast ocean itself. So he's really having the environment. He's really doing this out of the goodness of his heart. And so by 2015, this will be a complete statewide ban. But, you know, San Francisco has already been doing it. They don't provide bags. And they have some paper bags, but they do charge you. And the plastic bag industry, of course, is having an uproar about this new ban. And they have promised that they are going to, you know, they're going to lash out and they're going to lead a statewide counter ballot initiative to appeal it. And, you know, they don't like it. So the American Progressive Bag Alliance, and they're an industry lobby group, they said that this law, you know, implementing the reusable bags, is going to jeopardize jobs and lead to higher charges to consumers by grocers. And it said a majority of plastic bags are reused by consumers for disposing of trash, cleaning up their pets, and other uses. So I began to think about that, and I kind of did a little mental checklist of what I use for plastic bags. And so I was thinking about it, and you know, I do tend to actually reuse my plastic bags. And you know, whenever I go on a trip and I take my bathing suit, I take an extra plastic bag in case I need to come home with it wet. And then I was thinking, you know, groceries, if I, you know, don't eat my leftovers or, you know, there's something in my refrigerator, before I throw it directly in my trash, I will throw it in a plastic bag. And, you know, toting the twin stuff around is always really big. You know, I have my obvious, like, regular tote bags, but I do tend to keep a plastic bag just for good measure, you know, trash in the car. So I was thinking about it, and I do reuse them, but when I'm done and just throw them away, then where are they going? Back to the ocean. And so the people of the American Progressive Bag Alliance, the executive director of the group, Lee Califf, comes with a quote, and he says that it was a backroom deal between grocers and union bosses to scam California consumers out of billions of dollars without providing any public benefit, all under the guise of environmentalism. So I encourage everybody to think about that and see how they feel about the new law and really examine their usage. Examine what it does to the environment, and I encourage everyone to do a little bit of research and see where this trash goes, because you may be the best of the best recycler, and you know, my mom is definitely one of them. Our garage is filled with recyclable bins that she has, you know, I'm from Arizona, and they don't provide recyclable, like the recycling bins, the trash cans, and so she bought a bunch of storage totes, and we have them all lined up in the garage, and we do all of our recycling out there, and then we have to take it to an independent facility. And so I'm proud of my mom for taking the initiative to do that, as much as I don't like helping her go sort it because it's got old gross things in there, but it's really good, and she's really making an impact on an environment and kind of leading that change in our town. So I'm really proud of her. But I encourage everyone to just examine their own use of recycling and how they implement it into their life. And maybe just start, you know, just say, okay, I'm going to recycle all of my kitchen products. And then you can move on to your bathroom products and your home and, you know, so on and so forth. So baby steps. But this new law is applying to the plastic bags that are provided at checkouts at large grocery stores and supermarkets. And it will begin statewide in July 2015. And again, certain cities are already integrating this. And it will extend to convenience stores and drug stores in 2016. So, you know, Walgreens and, you know, mini marts, the little gas stations and whatnot. And so I thought that was really interesting. And it doesn't apply. The one thing that it doesn't apply to was the little bags that you use for produce or meat. You know, when you're at the grocery store and you want to put a package of chicken in one of those little thin bags or a head of broccoli. So those will still be able to be used. And it will also be able, plastic bags will still be able to be used at non-food retailers. So, you know, if you're going and buying clothes or and whatnot. But Target, surprisingly enough, they are also on the list because they do sell food. So they are no longer allowed to use plastic bags either. And the bill was sponsored by Democratic State Senator Alex Padilla of Los Angeles. And he says that he predicted voters, he's going to predict that voters are going to reject the plastic bag industry's attempt to repeal it at the ballot box. Padilla quotes, "For those concerned about the 10-cent fee that may be charged for paper, the simple, elegant solution is to bring a reusable bag to the store." And I thought that was really interesting, and I thought it was really refreshing how nice and blunt he was about that. And it's true. It's a 10-cent fee, and if you're not comfortable paying that, because it doesn't go to a charity, it goes directly to the store. But if you're not comfortable paying that, bring your own bags. It's as simple as that. You are fully in control. And so he really kind of illustrated that. And so, you know, I've spent a nice deal of money on bags lately because I always forget to take my recyclable bags. And I have a ton of them and they're all very cute. So I'm really going to have to start being more conscious about my recycling and putting my goods that I buy at the store in a plastic, or not a plastic, a reusable tote. So I hope that that gave you a little bit of information and maybe sparked your interest in recycling and a little bit of environmentalism. So we're going to take a quick break and you will hear from Harley D with a little bit of weird news. So you are listening to Real Life on Penguin Radio. Stay tuned right here.
Hey guys, Harley D here with your 3-minute break. 3 minutes of the wildest, weirdest, wackiest news to get your mind off your day. Let's get it started. Police in Troy, Michigan arrested a 49-year-old mother whom they say enlisted her daughter, a young boy, and a 61-year-old woman to help her shoplift clothing and other items from an Old Navy. A security camera footage showed the four entering the store shortly after 8 p.m. and then fanning out to different areas, where they proceeded to stuff various items into bags. Security guards were able to catch the 11-year-old girl and the 61-year-old woman, but the girl's mother and the young boy got away. According to the Detroit News, after the girl's mother failed to pick her up at the police station, officers called the woman at home. She initially denied being at the store in the first place, but then called an hour later and admitted that she lied about the incident because she was scared. Nevertheless, the woman still refused to turn herself in or pick up her daughter, who was finally retrieved by an aunt later that night. The woman is now wanted for retail fraud, child neglect, and contributing to the delinquency of a minor. The author of Washington's recreational marijuana law has suggested that Spokane test its sewage for traces of the cannabis chemical THC to get a more accurate picture of pot use by residents. American Civil Liberties Union lawyer Allison Holcomb proposed the idea at a Tuesday meeting of the City Council's Marijuana Policy Subcommittee. She got the idea From researchers at the University of Washington Alcohol and Drug Abuse Institute, where they have previously tested sewage in Oregon and Washington for the presence of illegal drugs like cocaine and methamphetamine. Holcomb said Tuesday that testing the sewage for THC provides a more accurate level of trends than self-reporting on surveys in which people are asked about their drug use. A Bay Area man has come up with a comfortable invention. A San Francisco financier, Jesse Herzog, has invented the so-called suitsie. It looks like a typical business suit worn over a white t-shirt, but hidden behind the button is a zipper that runs from the fly to the neck. The sleeves poking out from under the jacket cuffs are fake, and the shirt front is connected to the blazer. So, I was at work, and I was just thinking, you know, I need a way to look professional, but feel like I'm in my pajamas all the time. Seems reasonable, and it's also just a little bit more efficient way to get ready in the morning, Herzog said. The suit is currently turning to crowdfunding through San Francisco clothing label Beta Brand. And that has been it for your 3-minute break. I'm Harley D signing off. This is radio.dominican.edu.
Wow, you just heard from Harley D. Welcome back to Penguin Radio. Those were some really interesting stories. I found that really fascinating about that suit that, you know, looks like a little onesie that sounds like a suit. I'd be interested in having one of those. It's like a professional snuggie or something like that. But we just talked wellness in the form of plastic, and we are getting ready to talk beauty. How many of you like to get your nails done? I know I love it. It's probably one of my favorite pastimes. And, you know, there are so many options that you can get done. You know, you don't just head to the salon for, you know, your typical manicure anymore. You have a lot of choices. There's a lot out there. And, you know, you can get acrylic nails. You can get your traditional paint manicure. There are wraps and pedicures. But the newest trend is the gel nail. And it has been around for a while. It's not really necessarily new. And I'm pretty fairly certain that the majority of you girls out there have tried them yourself or have a friend that has. And, you know, it's becoming a little bit of a controversy in the nail and beauty industry. And, you know, they're sparking some thought in the health area and whether or not they're good for your hands, skin, and nails. They're posing a number of health risks, these gel manicures. So let's look into kind of what we might be dealing with here. You know, these gel manicures are all the rage because they last up to 3 weeks. You know, women that are constantly using their hands, or, you know, I've read articles about children that use them, and doctors and nurses and people in the healthcare profession, they're a fan of the nails because they don't chip from washing their hands all the time. And so they look really nice and shiny, and they've got that really kind of thick lacquer coating. But are these perfectly polished nails putting your health at risk? And, you know, there are potential dangers, and one of the questions is, can gel manicures cause skin cancer? Well, maybe. It's possible. So these gel nails, this gel polish, contains polymers, and that's what hardens your nails. And they're hardened, they're cured when they're placed under an ultraviolet, a UV lamp, and that cures or dries the nail polish. And it's a study of two healthy middle-aged women, and neither one of them had any history of skin cancer, developed non-melanoma skin cancers. You know, they had never had any history of developing these skin cancers on their hands. And both of these women had previous exposures to UV nail lamps. And the study concluded that the exposure, however, does elevate your risk for developing skin cancer. You know, they frequented these nail lights and kept putting their hands underneath. And the research was finding that they were at an alleviated risk. And however, though, there is a newer independent study, and they're saying that there is very little chance of getting skin cancer from the amount of UV light that is used in manicures. Scientists are saying that a person could put his or her hands under a nail lamp for 25 minutes a day without exceeding the internationally accepted safe limits for daily workplace UV exposure. So there are some sources that say, yes, that's, you know, you don't want to be using the UV because, yes, it is harmful. And there are limits on how much you can use. But, you know, there are limits in everything in life, and you kind of have to find that balance there. So while they can put you at a higher risk of cancer, it would take a lot of exposure. And what is nice is that typical nail salon exposure is less than 10 minutes per hand. So you're not getting a whole lot of exposure. And the great thing about the gel manicures is that they last a long time. So you're not having to go as frequently as if you were getting a regular manicure. Given with those frequent manicures, you can go as many times as you want, and chances are you're not going to be under one of those lights. You can let them air dry, but these nails, the gel nails, are impossible without this UV light. But you go once or twice a month on average, and that is well within the limits of the permissible UV exposure. So some other people are wondering, you know, can gel polish make you sick? Well, it can, but it also depends on the ingredients. So dermatologist Dr. Susan Taylor, she writes for the Huffington Post. She said that some nail polishes, these gel polishes, contain the chemical butylated hydroxanol, and it's better known as BHA, and that is considered to be a cancer-causing agent. So Dr. Taylor says, although we do not know exactly how much exposure you need for cancer to develop, it is important to be aware of this connection. So again, there is that posed risk, but do we know how much? We don't. And that's the problem. It's kind of that fear of the unknown. You know that you're putting something unhealthy on your body, yet you're not sure just how unhealthy it is. And here's the thing that I've personally noticed. There's going to be something unhealthy. People are going to find something unhealthy about pretty much everything. You know, there's something in there that might not necessarily be good for you. You know, the big one that always shocks me is fish. Fish is so, you know, it's low fat, it's high protein, it's so good for you. But on the flip side, it can contain so much mercury that it's bad for you. And so it's really that balance. Again, it's back to that balance of just how much is too much. So there are other risks that are associated with the ingredients list. But the good news is that not all gel nail polishes contain BHA. And so there's a simple solution, ladies, and you just have to check the back of the ingredients list because not all of them contain BHA. And one thing that is, however, in all gel nail polish is methyl acrylate. And that is a chemical that is way more commonly found in gel polish. And if inhaled too much, it will cause a shortness of breath. And if it comes in contact with your skin, it can cause an allergic reaction of dermatitis. And you know, that's when you get that really red, blotchy, bumpy, kind of itchy skin. I've had dermatitis a couple times, and let me tell you, it is no fun. I have a friend who suffers from eczema, and it's very similar. She, thankfully, when I got dermatitis, was there to back me up and give me some really good lotion. But it's not something that you want to be in contact with or have to deal with for the majority of the time. So that's something you really need to be careful about. And there are definitely other risks that are associated with these gel manicures. So because of this UV light exposure, these manicures have been linked to premature aging, wrinkling, and spotting on your hands. You know, I was trying to think of what they're like, and it's like a tanning bed, pretty much. And so those have been linked to premature aging and wrinkling because of all of the light exposure, and it's no different with your hands. So that's something to be conscious of. And this removing the gel polish is a little bit more of a trickier process than just removing it with regular nail polish remover. So removing this polish requires soaking or wrapping the nails in acetone for 10 or 15 minutes. And that is a really long exposure to acetone. That is a really harsh chemical, and that can kind of eat away at your nail beds and eat away at your skin. And then that just softens the polish. You then have to scrape it off, which that you have to scrape off the residue, and that can cause your nails to become thin and brittle and dry. So sometimes gel manicures but are a cause of a fungus or bacterial infection. But this is also a risk with a regular manicure. So that's something you have to be aware of. This is not just known for the gel nails. It is for everything. And it happens when a manicurist cuts or pushes back your cuticles. You know, if they cut a little too far, they're going to get a little bit of that exposed skin, and then all the chemicals getting in and out of there. That is cause for a fungal or bacterial infection. And so that's just something that anyone getting a salon service needs to be conscious of. You know, make sure you're going to a good clean salon, a place that you trust and know, to make sure that you have the utmost care for your nail beds. You know, those aren't something, you know, you can't replace your nail beds. And there are some precautions that you can take. By getting a gel manicure, you know, it may be a little bit more trouble than it's worth. But most doctors are saying, these dermatologists are coming and saying that avoiding the beauty trend altogether may be your best bet. And there are definitely going to be those that can't resist, but be smart and be safe, because there are a few precautions that you can take. So Dr. Anna Bender, she's a dermatologist. She works for Johns Hopkins University, and she's advising people to wear sunblock on their hands. And here's the kick. It needs to contain zinc or titanium dioxide. And it can't be just regular sunscreen. It's got to be that sunblock. And you should put that on before going under the UV light. She says that these ingredients protect the skin from the UVA rays, and those UVA rays are the ones emitted by the nail lamp, while sunscreen only protects against UVB rays. So again, you can put that all over your hands, and just make sure that it's a sun block with zinc or titanium dioxide. So another really cool way to protect your hands is to wear a pair of UV blocking gloves. And you can buy those online, and some salon stores will even have them, and you can just cut the tips off of them, which I thought that was really interesting. You can literally just cut the tips off, place them over your hands before you get your manicure. And then when you have to put your hands under the UV light, you're protected by that nice little shield that's going to block off any of those harmful rays. One last trick is to lessen your risk. You can look for a nail salon that uses an LED, and that stands for light emitting diode. And find a salon that uses those LED lights to cure the gel polish, because that light will dry your nails faster and it gives you a smaller dose of UV radiation. So now that you're aware of all the risks, are you going to get a gel manicure? It's up to you. So I decided to ask somebody who I know and trust, and she has been doing nails for over 20 years. Her name is Tiffany, and she's from my hometown, and she gives the best manicures I've ever had. And unfortunately, we weren't able to get an on-air interview because right now is when her kids have to go to school, so she had to drive them, so it's understandable. But we got to do a nice little online interview, and Tiffany told me that, yes, gel nails are better for you, and they are a lot more natural looking than acrylic nails. But she said to be aware that anything that you put on your nail beds is going to be harmful, and it will weaken your nail. However, what's nice about the gel manicures is that you can go longer in between. Most of her customers go 4 weeks with a gel manicure. And while the cost is a little bit more, Tiffany said that it's a better product. And I asked her why, like what makes you say that it's a better product, and she said that you don't have to use a primer, because the primer, when you get acrylic nails, you know, those fake nails, that eats away holes in your nail beds. So I was just utterly amazed at that. It eats away holes into your nail bed, little teeny tiny holes that you can't see. And so that was really an eye opener for me. And, you know, I used to get acrylics all the time, and I was just thinking I wanted to go back and get them done again. But I think that I'm going to avoid that now and find something that is healthier for my hands. Tiffany also advises the use of sunblock on your hands when you get your nails done. And there are vitamins that you can also take that will help strengthen your nail beds, and it's called biotin. And of course, you know, lots of women are still willing to, you know, overlook these issues, and they think, okay, you know, I'm not getting the acrylics done, you know, oh, you know, I don't want just a manicure, I need something to last a little bit longer. So while there are increased health risks, there are really great measures that you can go to protect yourself and protect your hands. So think about those the next time you go get a manicure, and just remember to take care of yourself and your nail health. So we are going to switch gears here a little bit from beauty and go into relationships. And I told you all earlier today that we're going to get very real, and we're going to talk about emotionally abusive relationships. And it's a sensitive subject, and I am not a professional, I would not claim to be, but I've done a little bit of research, and I've had friends that are in, you know, really damaging relationships, and especially college is a really big place for that. You know, you're trying to find yourself and find where you fit in and where you belong. And, you know, it's really easy to get caught up in the mix of, you know, really difficult emotions. And this doesn't necessarily have to be a boyfriend or a girlfriend. It can be just a friend. And sadly, this happens with a lot of parents too. Domestic abuse is very awful, and there's no way around that. And no matter what kind of abuse you're facing, it's really tragic. But I think that emotional abuse often gets overlooked a lot of times. You know, bruises and cuts and black eyes, those are really easy to see. And the effects of emotional abuse are oftentimes masked, and they can go unnoticed. And so the aim of emotional abuse is really to kind of, it chips away at your feelings and your self-worth as well as your independence. And if you're a victim of emotional abuse, you know, a common feeling is that there's no way out. You can't get out of the relationship that you're in or end that friendship, and you may feel as if there is, you have nothing without this partner in your life. Again, whether that be a boyfriend or a girlfriend, a husband or a wife, or just a friend, or it happens a lot, again, with parents too. And emotional abuse includes verbal abuse. And of course, you know, that's yelling, name calling, but it also can include blaming as well as shaming. That rhymes, blaming and shaming. But a few other big ones are isolation and intimidation, and these controlling behaviors are really red flags of emotional abuse. Additionally, abusers who use emotional or psychological abuse, they'll often throw in threats of physical violence, and sometimes they don't act on it, but sometimes they do, and that's it's a big issue in society today. You know, people are using other repercussions if you don't do what they want in these emotional abusive relationships. So, you know, some of you may think, you know, that physical abuse is far worse than emotional abuse. And, you know, because the physical violence, it could send you to the hospital or it will leave you with scars. But if you think about it, the scars from emotional abuse are just as real, and they can run very deep in your mind. In fact, emotional abuse can be just as damaging as physical abuse, and sometimes even more so. You know, the bruises heal from those physical damages, but the emotional trauma that you're left with, that bruises your heart, and that can really last a long time. So it can come in a myriad of ways. And, you know, there's not just one sign of, oh, this person, my friend, is being emotionally abused. And a big one for especially couples and, you know, more well-established couples, maybe not necessarily college kids, but a big one is financial abuse. And so you might think, okay, what in the world is financial abuse? And it basically comes down to rigidly controlling finances, you know, withholding money, withholding credit cards, or, you know, some couples have been known to make accounts and they track every little penny that you spend and make you accountable for it as well. And another form of financial abuse is withholding. And it's withholding basic necessities like food, clothing, medication, and shelter. And, you know, I thought that is really crazy, like withholding like clothes and shelter. And it's really sad because I was just talking to my mom about a lady that we knew in our, you know, back in our home state of Arizona. And she was in a really emotionally abusive relationship, and she had children with this man, and it was just becoming really bad. And so she decided that she needed to get out of there. Well, he was not having it, and he was really upset with her. And so rather than her being able to leave on her own terms, he kicked her out when he knew that things weren't going very well. And he kept all of her clothes, all of her belongings, and refused to let her back into her own house. And so she had to go find another place to live, start her life from scratch. And we just heard that she's actually going to be able to go back into her home now, her previous home, and collect all of her belongings. And so that really made me happy. But 2 years, that is a long time to, you know, not have all of your clothes and all of your things. She said it felt like Christmas going shopping at her old house, finding all of her old things that she had forgotten about. So this can also be including, you can also be restricted to an allowance or really sabotaging your job, because if you think about it, that's financial. Your job is where you make money. So if your emotionally abusive partner is making you miss work or call constantly to where they're distracting you or preventing you from being productive, that is a really big sign of financial abuse. You know, dominance is something that is a big issue, and abusive individuals, this is their power trip. They need to feel in charge of the relationship. So if you are noticing that you may have some emotional abuse going on in your life, look at for your partner who's really dominant over you. They'll try to make decisions for you and your family, to tell you what to do, and, you know, maybe they want you to obey without any question 100% of the time. You know, a very common trait is for them to treat you like a servant or a child or a possession, as sad as that is. You know, an abuser will do anything that he or she can to make you feel bad about yourself. That's the very root of this emotional abuse. It makes you feel bad about yourself. It makes you feel as if you are defective in some way, that you're not good enough, that you're not right. Something is wrong with you. And, you know, if you're believing that you're worthless and that no one else will want you, you're less likely to leave that emotionally abusive situation. And, you know, it can be in the form of insults or name calling, shaming, or even public put downs in front of your friends or your family, or, you know, just at your local Walmart or whatever it may be. It can really lead up to really significant humiliations, like, you know, these people will isolate their partners, and these are all weapons of abuse, and they're really just designed to erode your self-esteem and really make you feel powerless. So I want to go back to isolation, and that's something that you can really look out for. That's going to be a big sign for maybe someone that you're friends with. And in order to increase, you know, your dependence on him or her, an abusive partner may cut you off from the outside world and prevent you from seeing your family or seeing your friends. And so if you're thinking that a friend of yours might be in this troubled situation, that's really something to look into. You know, have you seen them lately? Keep an eye out on them. It's a big one, something you can do. So, of course, there are the obvious threats that abusers are commonly going to use to keep their partner from leaving them, and or even pressing charges against them. And they can use these threats to scare you from taking legal action. your abuser, it can be really intense. It may be threatening to take money away and that financial abuse, or threatening to not let you see your family or friends, but it may go further than that. And that's something that you have to be aware of, and that it can escalate very quickly. And so they may threaten to hurt or kill you, or, you know, hurt your family or your children or even pets, as sad as that is, you know, innocent little pets. And it's all a sign of, it's all comes back to intimidation. And these are varieties of intimidation tactics. And, you know, they're really designed to scare you into submission. You know, these tactics are going to include threatening looks and gestures, and maybe threatening or smashing things in front of you and destroying property. And, you know, that's a clear message that if you don't obey, that they're going to become violent with you. And of course, abusers are very good at making excuses for these inexcusable actions. And they'll try to blame their abusive and violent behavior on, you know, a bad childhood, an ex relationship, or a bad day, and even the victims of abuse. And they're really going to find a way to get around their bad behaviors. And somehow they create a shift that makes these violent outbursts and emotional outbursts, they're going to twist that and make it into their victim's fault in their own mind. And this is a very vicious cycle, and it causes a lot of pain for people. And I'm collecting this research from Psychology Central, and they gave a really great list of things to do to try to get yourself back and to combat this vicious cycle. And the first one is to get your power back. And the quickest and easiest way to do this is be willing to walk away. And I know that's a lot easier said than done, but by walking away, this will enable you to move forward with the next step of place, the next step of power, and not be living in a place of fear. And that's something that is good for everybody, is you need to be able to walk away, even if you're not in a necessarily psychologically or, you know, a psychological or emotional abusive relationship. You need to be able to walk away from a bad situation, whether that just be with a friend or, you know, with a coworker. Walk away and do what's right for you. And so you have to set boundaries for yourself. You know, we talk about that in my psychology class a lot. And, you know, there's boundaries, and they're defined as the undefined rules of being. And so that, it's really going to help you if you can set these limits on these criticisms and emotional outbursts. You have to communicate and let your partner know that, yes, you are open to hearing about their concerns about your interactions with each other, but you have to be able to let them know that you are no longer going to engage in conversations that emotionally attack who you are deep down as a person. So you need to be able to consider your partner's concerns. Think about this in regards to yourself. You know, I'll turn it back to you. What are you willing to do? You know, what's completely off the table? And you have to make sure that these requests from your partners, that they align with your personal well-being and integrity. You know, if you're not feeling comfortable with doing these things in order to keep the peace, that's something that you need to mentally take note of. And you know deep down if something's right for you. You know what's healthy. You know what you can handle. So really kind of listen to that. Listen to your brain. Listen to what your heart says. So you have to be honest with yourself, and you really got to, you know, consider your goals and values and your emotional needs. You have to make sure that your decisions are aligned with yourself, and make sure that your needs are met, because this is all about you, and you are the most important person in your life. So, you know, let your partner know what you can and cannot do. And whatever you do, make sure that you're not intimidated. You need to have a powerful and strong voice. You need to be able to say no and make it clear that your partner will have to accept that no. And if they can't, you know, maybe it's not best if you two are together and you need to part ways. So this is the one that I found the most interesting, is to find people and experiences that celebrate who you are. And I love this because I think that it's a really, really important piece of information. And that's for those in emotionally abusive relationships and those who are just doing what they do. You need to find people that celebrate who you are and find ways to connect with the person that, you know, the person that you want to be. You know, you don't want to be around people that are going to treat you in a terrible manner. So you want to engage and connect with people that support you and love you for who you are. At the end of the day, only you can decide if these controlling behaviors are something that you're willing to live with or not. You know, relationships should be something that support your growth, not something that diminishes it. So celebrate who you are, because love should not be a put down. Everyone deserves to have a powerful and loving relationship and friendship. So it all starts back with you. Love yourself enough to take the first step in reclaiming you. So we just got extremely real today, and I want to thank everybody for listening. And if you or someone that you care about are battling an abusive relationship, no matter if it's physical or emotional, there are a lot of resources out there. And the first is the National Domestic Violence Hotline. And they have some amazing online resources for you. They include some questionnaires about signs of abuse and, you know, what you might need to look for in yourself and others, kind of highlight some more things that I talked about with you today. And they operate around the clock, 7 days a week, and it's completely confidential and free of cost. It's the National Domestic Violence Hotline, and they really provide a lot of tools and immediate support to help victims and, you know, kind of take them on to the next steps to free their life of abuse. So callers can call the hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE, which is 7233, so 1-800-799-SAFE. And they're going to have really highly trained, experienced advocates. And, you know, they're going to be able to offer support or, you know, even crisis intervention. And they can refer you to more local services as well for whatever area you're in. And they speak over 170 languages. So I thought that was really great too. You know, they don't limit anybody. This is for anyone who might need it. So I really want to lighten it up now. It's been an emotional few minutes here on Real Life, but that's what we're about, right? Getting deep down into your emotions. So I talked to you about organization last week, and I mentioned a resource that our teacher provided, and it's called Trello. And we actually had a workshop on it the other day, and I am basically in love with this program. And I'm sure a lot of you have heard of Pinterest, and it's basically online boards, and it helps organize pictures and links to things you like. You know, they have every category you can imagine, from cars to food to clothes and, you know, home decor and funny animals, you know, anything you could possibly want. And you can categorize these boards and keep a collection of things that you like. Well, they've come out with a more professional version, so that's kind of what I want you to think in your mind, compare this to. So it's kind of like the relationship between Facebook and LinkedIn is Pinterest and Trello. So Trello is free to sign up, and it's this online system of organization, and I actually want to pull it up in the studio here right now, and I thought it was really great. All you need is an email to sign up, and you can open up the site, and when you log on, it takes you to a really nice, clean web page, and it keeps you automatically logged in, and it can link to your Facebook or another form of social media. And right away, right on the screen, it's going to have your boards, and you can categorize these organization boards to whatever you want them to be. Whether you're in college and you need to have one for each of your classes or each individual project, or maybe you're at work and you need it for, you know, here are my HR files, or here are my upcoming projects that I need to go to New York next week. Whatever it may be, you can categorize a board. Right now, I have one that I'm using, mapping Marin. I'm doing a project in one of my classes, and I'm mapping Marin by coffee shops. And so I have all of my interviews lined up and all of my information that I need to do and all of my assignment dates and due dates. And you can color code these boards and charts as well. And what's cool is you can add members to them, similar to a Google Doc. That way, if you know, okay, here's my class group project, you can add your friends onto these boards as well. It keeps it really nice and organized. Within the board, there are three columns. One is a to-do, one is a doing, and one is done. So for example, I know that I have an interview to do on October 16th. And so that is for my colloquium class. And so that's going to be with a purple label. Everything for my colloquium is purple. So you can pull it up and you click on it and it is called a card. And so what it does, it gives you a title, a label, a due date, and then you can write down any information that you could possibly need for this interview. You can attach documents, you can put photos on it, again, you can label it or add members, and it just is a really nice visual way to see everything that you need to do all in one place. And when you're done, you can move it to the done category, and you can archive all of this information. And it's really user-friendly, and it's something that you need to just look at for yourself. And when you open up a Trello account, again, it's free, they're going to give you a welcome board that's going to give you all of the tools that you need to use in order to get started. It'll have a basic, intermediate, and advanced category. And so the basics will give you the information about what the website does. And if you move on over to the intermediate, it will teach you how to color code, and you can even change the background. That way, this is like a personal day planner for you. And you can go up to the advanced category, and you can use keyboard shortcuts and even download the apps for iOS and Android as well as Windows 8. So this is completely mobile. You can take your organizer wherever you need to go. Download it on your phone, and it'll be with you wherever you need to be. So I thought that this was a really great organization tool that I wanted to share with you guys. It's something I've implemented into my daily life. I still use my written day planner, but I also thought this was just a really cool, innovative trick that you guys might get a little bit of use of as well. So I wanted to share that with you. Again, it is Trello, Trello.com. So go ahead and check it out and get a little bit more organized. So we are out of time today on Real Life. So I want to thank you guys for listening. Enjoy the rest of this beautiful day, and I will see you right back here on radio.dominican.edu next Wednesday at 8. Have a beautiful day.